I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Starting a business on your own can be lonely and worrying. Selling online multiplies this issue tenfold. Getting expert help is a great way to reduce anxiety, wasted time, and confusion. The Amazing FBA Mentoring Program is in its fourth year of helping sellers to get started on Amazon. By now, we have former clients who have, starting from scratch, done six figures and even in one case, seven figures a year. Obviously, these are not typical results. These are exceptional people. Nevertheless, we can help you get launched faster, safer, and with a much higher chance overall of success. With clients from Melbourne, Australia, to Manchester, England, we bring a genuinely international perspective. To find out more, go to amazingfba.com/mentoring. Thanks for listening. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based sellers. In fact, a lot of what we're discussing today will apply in the USA. I've got a guest from the US, Robin Johnson of bestfromthenest.com and Marketplace Blueprint. So Best from the Nest is for resellers, as in retail arbitrage or online arbitrage or private labelers to help people sell more products online. And then the Marketplace Blueprint is for brand owners and agency owners. So Robin has a huge overview of how people make money on Amazon, not just from years of doing it, but lots of different sort of business models, which we talked about in the last episode. And if you missed that, I really think it was worth hearing because we often sort of lock into one or two ways of sourcing and it becomes a kind of religion. And actually, once you get your head up from that obsession, you can see things that might work better for you. But today we're going to talk about cash flow and cash management, because it's a critical side of a very, very capital intensive business, one that a lot of us are struggling with, including me sometimes. So welcome back, Robin, about this. So I understand you've got a thing called the 5-hour challenge. First of all, how does this relate to cash flow and financials?
Well, so we've been coaching mostly high volume Amazon sellers for about 5 years now. And one thing that we noticed over and over again was there's problems with cash flow. And one thing that people don't really understand is a lot of times your problems with cash flow come from a couple different places. One is just you don't have enough cash. And, you know, that's obviously the thing. So people think if I just borrow more money, then that fixes the problem. In general, it does not fix the problem. It magnifies the problem. Because some places that cash can get sucked up is your total amount of inventory and the turn of your inventory. So how quickly does that inventory move? That's going to affect your cash flow. Your expenses. So if you hired your mom to help you with packing and you can't fire her now, even though she's not very good at packing, but you keep her on the payroll, that's going to increase your expenses, which means we have to sell more in order to break even. And then it's not understanding your margins and your break even, right? So if you don't know that I need to sell with my current inventory, so let's say I have a PL that has a 30% margin and that my expenses are $15,000 a month, how much do I have to sell in order to just break even? So I kind of developed some tools along the way to help sellers with that. And so the 5-hour challenge really goes through, what are your expenses? Starting to build some of the basics of a cash flow, understanding how your inventory turns. And we've created a fancy spreadsheet that takes all of the data from Amazon's inventory health report and identifies, you know, what percentage of your inventory has been there less than 90 days, what suppressed inventory do you have? So you can start to develop and identify what's not working in your business. So it really came from working with a lot of sellers and saying, okay, we're seeing this theme over and over again, because everybody talks about sourcing. Isn't sourcing fun? Well, if you're not managing your cash flow and your inventory turn, you won't be sourcing for long. I've had many a call where people have come and then, you know, can we turn this around? And it is very difficult to tell somebody, you know, your best shot right now at survival is bankruptcy, because, you know, when you have $25,000 a month in debt service payments, it is really, really hard to come back from that. And it's very much a slippery slope. I borrowed once and then I borrowed again. And then you can't get yourself out of a hole by digging down. So you have this 5-hour challenge really kind of came from seeing so many sellers in this horrible, horrible debt spiral and really wanting to do something to help. So we do sell an academy that's kind of connected and has some additional training, but really we just want people to look at their numbers so you can really understand, you know, if this business really is for you, are you making the right direction, or do we need to start thinking about a plan B?
So some reality, I guess the reality check, I guess like going to see a medical doctor in the biological world, I suppose that looking at the cash flow is the equivalent, you know, having a blood test or whatever. With it sounds very attractive, doesn't it? But it does sound like there's some serious things. So we have to talk about debt in a second. And there's a sort of warning, a big old warning going on there. One thing I want to ask first is, question that I think is very important, not only for those who are already working in their business, but also those who are thinking of going into a new line of business or a new business model or something, which is the question of working capital, because it keeps coming up. And very simply put, well, the first question is, what is your understanding of the word working capital? Let me not impose my ideas, because people seem to mean different things by it. What is your understanding of the word working capital?
So first off, let me just give the disclaimer that I do not come from an MBA background. So in Amazon, we use a lot of terms that don't really mean what they mean. So like when in Amazon, when we say ROI, everybody knows what you're talking about. That doesn't necessarily, it's not the pure definition of ROI. So let's just start by saying, for most people, we kind of became accidental entrepreneurs. When people are talking about working capital, when I think of working capital, I think of how much capital do I have in order to do a couple things, keep the inventory flowing, provide for emergencies, and then also to cover my expenses. And the higher your expenses are, the more, or the lower your margins are, the more important it is for you to get even more fanatical about managing your cash flow, being proactive about the way that you manage your cash flow. When I think of working capital, and there might be a better, fancier definition, I'm looking at kind of how the cash is moving through your business. And I also want to look at how much time do you have? So that's one of the right reasons we recommend this 13-week rolling cash flow. And it's basically a budget that happens by week. Because Amazon, with the disbursements for many sellers being every 2 weeks, it's like I have $47 today, I have $47,000 on Monday. And so you go from this, I'm rich, I'm poor, I'm rich, I'm poor, I'm rich, I'm poor. By having that weekly thing, it helps you avoid things where, you know, if you had just waited 2 more days to make that purchase or that big push for your inventory, you wouldn't have had to borrow money or move the stuff around on a credit card. And that saves a lot of time. And it also gives you an early warning system. So in 13 weeks, I'm going to be negative on my cash flow. Now that gives me 12 weeks to figure out what I'm going to do to accommodate for that and to compensate for that and make sure that I don't run out of cash and make some really proactive decisions. If you wait until you actually look at your bank account and there's no money in there, you don't have very many options. And when you need money, money is very expensive. So being able to look ahead of time when you still have capital in your account is going to give you a lot more options and it's going to reduce your stress. And you know, for a long time, I didn't want to look at my numbers because I was afraid if I looked at them, what if I wasn't making as much money as I thought? And what if all of the sacrifices that I was making and all the hard hours I was putting in wasn't worth it after all? And I was so afraid to look. But I will tell you that whether it's good news or whether it's bad news, it's good news. Because if it's good news, you can breathe, you can relax, you can actually enjoy your life and the hard work that you've put in. If it's bad news, that stinks. But if you know what's going on, now you have the opportunity to fix it. From ignorance, there's no opportunity for action. So by knowing it, that gives you the ability to start making the right decisions before you end up $30,000, $40,000 in debt.
Yeah, I think you're right. And that's I like the way you put it. If it's good news, it's good news. If it's bad news, it's good news in the sense of it will be good news once you fix the problem. And yeah, you're right. And it's one of those, the willingness to grasp the nettle, as my mum used to put it, you know, you're going to get stung unless you deal with it in a sort of decisive way. So we've mentioned getting into big debt a couple of times. So I guess we ought to deal with this as sort of one of the less talked about topics because it sure as hell ain't sexy. But
it does not sell courses, let me tell you that.
It does not sell courses, no. But you're absolutely right. So thank you for being honest about that. So tell me, you were saying that people are ending up in huge interest or payment spirals. first of all, how do people end up in debt? And then we ought to look into, is there a way out of it? But let's not leave people on a complete depressive low. But first of all, how does that end up happening in your experience?
So first off, let me say, because somebody's like, oh, she's just anti-debt. No, I'm not anti-debt. Debt can be a wonderful and powerful tool. Just like every other tool, those tools can be used to build and they can also be used to destroy. So debt used well, debt used proactively and thoughtfully and managed carefully is an amazing tool to help you accelerate the growth of your business. Now, I'm not saying everybody needs to grow their business debt-free. Can I tell you that the businesses that I have that in my portfolio of coaching clients that are debt-free, are those owners more relaxed? Do they enjoy their life more? Do they get to spend more time with their family? Do they have less sleepless nights? 100%. But they did slow their growth, so there's a sacrifice that they made for all of those things. So when it comes to debt, like what was, I'm sorry, I got on my soapbox. What was the actual question?
No, that was a very good response. Okay. I mean, so you answered a sort of question, which it was implied by my question, which is that, you know, should you use debt, which is an excellent question. Your answer is definitely yes, although it adds to your stress, but it enables you to grow faster, I guess, is what you just said. So really helpful. So what I was really saying is how do people end up in debt? But I suppose what I should have asked is, to reference your response, how do people end up in excessive debt, perhaps? Because I guess manageable debt is a good thing by the sound of it. So what's the sort of slippery slope that you mentioned earlier?
Thanks for keeping me on track. So there is a myth in our space, and it's a very dangerous and destructive myth. And that is more inventory solves all problems. That if I just had enough inventory, if I just had enough product, then my sales would go up, then I would have more money. So that's not the way that inventory-based businesses work, because there's a lot more variables in there. I've seen a lot of people that focused on, you know, I want to go from 1 million to 5 million. They reached that goal and they made less money in profit at the end of that year than they did when they were selling, you know, a fifth of that, right? So when it comes to getting into that debt, what usually happens is I have, you know, things are going along. I'm having some success. Things are moving. And because growth sucks up cash, you get to a point where you realize one day, I know I'm making money, but at the same point of time, I'm not 100% positive because I don't have any cash left in the bank. So Amazon or, you know, Payability or some other company comes out and says, would you like more money than you probably have? I mean, I can't remember. I remember the first time that they offered me like $300,000. And I was like, this is, they're just going to give me this much money. And so, you know, they give you all of this money and it's great for the first 3 months because you buy a whole bunch of stuff. You know, you feel like things are finally on the move. And somewhere between, depending on how well you manage that money, between 2 and 4 months later, the first initial rush of that cash is there. And so if you haven't managed that cash well to make sure that that inventory that you purchased that first 2 weeks is turning quick enough to make the payment on the second or third month, then all of a sudden we're right back where we thought we were before, right? So now we have all of this inventory, you know, maybe we hired extra people, maybe we expanded somehow, and now we're out of cash again. So we take a second loan, but that loan is just, it's just a bridge loan. I just need a little bit. I just need to get through the next 3 weeks or the next 6 months until this loan is paid off. This is all I need. And 3 months later, we take another loan. And then you start not paying off your credit cards every month. Because our business is so cyclical, we have to keep feeding the beast as we talk about it. You can't just stop buying inventory. You stop buying inventory, then and a month later, you don't have the money to pay the debt service. Now we're really in trouble. And so you feel like you're on this hamster wheel. And you can't tell anybody because we all tell each other, you know, like that's how we puff each other up at conferences. Like, oh, I'm a great seller. And so we can't say, you know what? I don't know how to tell my wife. I don't know how to tell my kids that we can't go on vacation this year because I have no cash. I don't know how I'm going to pay my mom to pack. I don't know. I'm going to have to fire Susie and she's got 3 kids, but I can't make payroll this week. And so because we don't talk about it, everybody assumes that everybody else is doing just fine. And it must just be me. It must just be me that's terrified every day when I open my bank account. And it's not all Amazon sellers. There are people who are wildly profitable and doing really, really well. But I would say that most businesses go through a period where cash is tight at the minimum, right? So we've had, we personally have, that's kind of where we started getting, learning about this is because I was just tired of the responsibility. I had been working so hard. I was tired of looking at the cash flow. So I hired somebody and her job, you know, I hired a bookkeeper and she was supposed to manage the cash flow. And then I would call her and say, hey, you want to spend $50,000? Do we have the cash for that? And she would say yes. Well, the problem was she was just saying yes, but she wasn't checking the cash flow. So we got ourselves really, we put got ourselves in a tight spot, and it took us a long time to dig yourself out. It does, it takes 5 bad decisions, you know, two weeks to make those bad decisions, and it can take you 2 years to dig out of the consequences. So, but know that you can, and we've seen people turn around businesses that had so much debt, and it is possible, but it takes discipline and it takes time.
Okay, thank you for that reality check. I mean, I think it's tough, but I think once you're willing to, as you said, the first thing is that everyone's out there, particularly men. I think, you know, I mean, it's probably truer of that as being sexist, but I'm a man, so I can say it. And we're not very good at being honest about the dark details. And, you know, you've got to be careful where you share these things, but within a trusted space, like in a mastermind, yes, or with a coach or somebody where you've got some reason to think they're never going to compete with you, then, you know, it's important to be able to be honest, because then you can start to, if only with your accountant, because then you can start to fix it. So as you say, 2 weeks to make bad decisions and 2 years to come back. I guess I'm just making some notes there. The two and two, that's quite two sobering time frames, 2 weeks to get into it and 2 years to get out. But I guess on the other hand, the positive side of what you're saying is if you're willing to be honest with somebody who knows their business, then you can dig yourself back out. You just got to be disciplined. I guess like a lot of advice around debt generally, it sounds like very similar advice to consumer credit card debt, which is a whole different ballgame. But so how do we avoid getting there in the first place? And that's obviously preferable to do that. You've already talked about rolling cash flow projection, which sounds very sensible. 13 weeks, to me, that sounds like a minimum for sure. I mean, like, I know a lot of entrepreneurs that I work with that are managing bigger private label businesses where, you know, the capital requirements are pretty serious because you can't tie the cash up for so long. They generally project forward 1 or even 3 years. In one case, I know one business has a 10-year cash flow projection, which is kind of unusually far forward.
But I know, but myself, I would never manage a 10-week. No, like, I can barely keep my stuff together to 13.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, for me also, that would be a council of perfection that I would just give up on. So rather than be perfectionist, I think 13 weeks is probably like 100% improvement for most of us, myself included. So what are the things that catch people unaware with debt then? You've already talked about the inventory turnover not being as fast as you think. What are the other sort of aspects that catch people unawares with debt?
So is it okay? Would you feel comfortable if I shared my screen? I want to show you a calculator that I made.
Certainly. I mean, we do have an audio. This is an audio podcast, so we can probably split that off at the end, and then we can have a separate thing at the YouTube channel. So we'll put it in the show notes as well.
Okay. And I'll make sure I narrate it really well.
Yeah, exactly. That's all we need.
So for those listening, it's at bestfromthenest.com/calc. There's no sales on this page. This is just a free tool. It's available. I don't even gather the emails that are at the bottom because I'm not a good marketer in that way. I just want to help people. So with this, it's a tool that you look at your average ROI, and then you're going to put in your profit goal. Now, something tricky here is what I would recommend you do is you're going to add up all of your expenses. So in that 5-hour challenge, we have like a memory jogger that's going to help you remember, oh, I have a repricer, oh, I have boxes, you know, how much does it cost me to keep my business alive every month? So let's say I add all of that up, and let's say that it's $2,500 a month to keep my business alive, right? And my average ROI is 30%, which I talk to a lot of sellers. So in order to just keep your business from eating itself and cannibalizing itself and you slow painful death, I have to sell at the minimum $16,000 in order to just break even. So if I'm selling less than, and I always try to round up, and this is a give trajectory, not an automatic calculator, not a precise calculator. So it takes a bunch of assumptions. So if you're really analytical, you might, your hair might end a little bit on end. But for those of us that are like, I just need to have an idea, then I would say, okay, my minimum goal is $20,000 in gross sales at 30% in order to just stay alive, which means I need to spend, you know, between you know, $8,500 and $10,000 a month in order to just break even. So if I don't have the capital for that, this is red flag number one. And I need to go look at lowering my expenses or raising my ROI. So let's just say I was able to increase my ROI to 60%. I literally need just about half of what I needed to sell about half. So I only need to sell about maybe $10,000 to $15,000 a month. And I only need to buy maybe $4,000 to $6,000 or $7,000 a month in cost of goods. So this gives you an idea, you know, okay, if I raise my ROI, or if, let's say I'm going to get a warehouse and that warehouse is going to be an extra $1,000 or pounds a month, then if I change this into three, and then I can see, okay, well, now I'm going to have to source this much more. So the big thing that this talks about is break-even point. So I just wanted to show you that calculator real quick. What you want to look at is, you might think, I'm making $5 on each widget I'm selling. And you are, you know, if you put it in a calculator, it'll say, yeah, after Amazon fees, you're making $5. But if you have, you know, $5,000 a month in expenses, then the first 1,000 units you sell are just making sure your business is not going to collapse. It's only until 5,001 that you're actually making $5 per unit. So you need to know what your break-even point is. A lot of times, it's not that people are bad sourcers or that they're not managing their money well. It's that they're not selling at the velocity that they need for their expenses. So knowing what your break-even point is, and you don't have to do anything with me. Just Google break-even point, you know, and go in and add that up. You don't need anything fancy from me. You can do that on your own. We have some tools to make it easier, but the biggest thing is knowing, so if you know what your break-even point is, then we can say, okay, in order to survive, this is the absolute minimum. But then if I want to, I can go in and add a couple $1,000 in there if that's how much I need to profit per month in order to quit my job, in order to hire Susie. Then I can add that in there and say, okay, this is how much I need to be selling at this ROI or higher. And then I also need to be really clear, you know, do I have enough capital to have this increased expense? So being aware, you know, one thing you want to start thinking about is every time I spend money on something not inventory, I'm increasing the amount of money that I have to sell and to get enough inventory to sell enough to cover that cost. So if you're at 100% ROI, which, you know, I remember back in the day when everybody was 100% ROI. So if you're at 100% ROI, for every dollar in expense you add, you have to sell $3 worth to cover that. So for every $1,000 in expense, you might have to cover, you know, you sell $3,000 more. Now, most of us are not at 100% ROI. So for every $1,000, you might need to sell $10,000 more. So knowing where your break-even point is a really important piece to identify, you know, and make sure that you're not going into debt.
You make an exceptionally good point there. So thank you very much for clarifying that. And as you said, it's a very good rule of thumb to bear in mind, to take very seriously. Every time you spend money on something that's not inventory, you're upping the amount that you have to make. And that's a real tweetable right there. This question then, do you have enough capital to handle this increased expense? Again, very good question. How do we know how much capital, or I suppose it might be, I don't know if the word working capital is the right one, but how much capital you need, again, is coming up as a question. How do you go about that, deciding that in a pragmatic way? And again, of course, you're not a CPA and we're not expecting that because you're an entrepreneur. But from a practical point of view, as an entrepreneur, how do you figure out how much more capital you're going to need to put into the system at a time like that?
So I use that calculator that I showed you, and I'll say, you know, so let's say I'm saying, well, okay, so I need this much capital, whether it's to go on vacation, to buy a house, to, you know, whatever. And I'm going to work with my CPA on that too, because, you know, what I write off and all these things, you know, depending on where you live and where the tax rules are, they're going to be different. But what, let's say I wanted to, so you're like, let's say I knew that I wanted to bring home $50,000 this year, then I might say, okay, that, you know, okay, so that's, you know, basically I need to have my monthly expenses of $2,500, and then I also want to profit $2,500, and then I need another $1,000 just to kind of cover incidentals. So I would put in, you know, $6,000 into that calculator and then look at my current ROI and say, okay, this is how much I would need to spend in order to get there. And then we work backwards. And so I might say, right now I'm sourcing $50,000 a week, and I really need to be sourcing $75,000 a week. So I'm going to increase that stair step, maybe like, you know, $2,000 a week for the next X weeks, or I'm going to do 2,000 this week, 4,000 next week, 6,000. And so I'm able to kind of look at how that's going to turn in cash flow and ramp up. Some of it does go down to forecasting and looking at how much inventory you have. So one tool that you can look at is looking at how much inventory do you have. You can do that, the monthly inventory report and look at like, okay, so in January I had $100,000 in sales and $200,000 in inventory, same for January and February and April. So for May, I can say if I wanted to sell $200,000, it would be predictable. If I don't, you know, change the way that I'm sourcing, I would need to have $400,000 in inventory to make $200,000 in sales, because on average, I'm turning about half that inventory. So, you know, there's a lot of numbers that we can look at, and it's going to depend on a couple of things. So as I'm looking at that sourcing ramp up, I would look at, okay, how much money do I have the money to be able to do that? And if I don't, then I'm going to have to take it all back down and say, all right, I need to expand out the amount of time. I need to either raise my ROI or I need to lower my expenses. Those are the options. Those are the levers that you can pull. After you get into your, because when you're not looking at any of your numbers, you're riding a roller coaster.
Yeah.
You never really know what you're doing. It's just like, you know, but after you look at it, then you can actually steer, you know?
Yeah. And I think the other thing you put your finger on, like if you have more debt, you have more sleepless nights. But I think actually one of the reasons to be willing to look at the numbers is that if you have a suspicion things aren't very good, you may be right and you may not be, but the uncertainty in itself is going to eat away at you. So I think we're coming back to that idea. But yeah, I think there's going to be quite a lot involved. As you said, a CPA or an accountant, as we call it, I suppose it's a certified accountant, chartered accountant is strictly what we call it in the UK, then that's got to be a good thing as well. As a coach of mine said years ago, and quite rightly, none of us spend enough time talking to accountants. It's not an exciting conversation, but we just have to have it. So tell me a little bit more about the dangers of the debt side. Obviously, not forecasting accurately, not knowing how much capital you need, not having a good ROI, all those things obviously contribute. Are there other debt-specific dangers that we need to look out for?
So inventory churn is another really big one. So what we recommend people pull down this report and they look at what percentage of their inventory has been there over 90 days. People ask, like, what's the guideline? I really want to see that, you know, that your inventory that's been there 90 days or less is at least 60%, maybe 75% if you're private label. If you're OA or RA, you're going to have a little bit more dead inventory and that's okay. Same for books. But if you're OA or wholesale, you really want to try to work towards 60 to 75%. If you're below 50, that would be a red flag. You need to get somebody to work with you on your sourcing, your buying criteria, because something is broken. That's another area that you might say, well, that's different. That's not going into debt. If you take a loan or you spend a lot of inventory and you're not really looking at how things are turning, that's how you end up in debt, because you're like, but I'm buying more inventory and it's not fixing the problem. Then that could be the reason why that's not working.
Thank you for flagging that up. So really it's about, it's the funny thing, isn't it? Everyone's obsessed with profit and loss, but really it's about the cash coming in and out over time. In other words, cash flow. That really, the more I learn about business, the more I learn about the successful businesses and the ones who get into trouble, the more it's all about cash flow. And profit and loss is almost, it's not incidental because it affects the value of the asset, but in terms of month to month survival, it seems almost incidental, right? So tell me a bit more about, so I understand why people may get further into debt based on the inventory thing, but are there particular things? I know you mentioned to me before we went on air, the cost of interest is sometimes something people get wrong. Tell me a bit about that.
So when people borrow, so something to know, you know, if you have an MBA, you're like, blah, 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 lady. I mean, the things I'm going to say are pretty common sense, but it's not common sense if you didn't come from an MBA. So if you didn't know this, then that is great because now you know it. So on your profit and loss, there's certain things that don't show up on your profit and loss. Now this might be different for the UK. You know, talk to your accountant. Don't take tax and financial advice from Yahoo's on the internet, right? But you know what you want to do is you want to look at, there's a couple things. So your interest from your loans doesn't show up on your profit and loss. Your owner's pay. So if you did like, if you did a draw instead of a salary, that's not going to show up on your profit and loss. So it might say that you're profiting $2,000 or $5,000, but if you're paying that much in interest every month, then you're actually losing money. So where people get lost on the profit and loss, they say, well, that must mean, so if it said I profited $50,000, then that means that I actually should have $50,000. But that's not the way it works, because before your inventory sells, it lives on a different document. So there's a couple things that live on the balance sheet that don't live on the profit and loss. So this is why you can't just use Inventory Lab or GoDaddy as your only accounting software, because neither of them, unless they've changed something recently, have a balance sheet. The balance sheet tells you if you're upside down on your assets and liabilities. So the on the balance sheet, you have how much cash you have, how much inventory you have. So if you have, like, maybe if you own a forklift, that would be an asset that lives on the balance sheet. So that, because that unsold inventory, you know, for unless you do, if you, unless you, so especially if you're on accrual, right, doing accrual basis, or then when you buy an item, it lives on the balance sheet. When that item sells, it moves to the profit and loss. So you can't write it off until it sells. So that is the amount of inventory you have. The next section is going to do your liabilities. So it's going to be how much do you own on each credit card? How much Amazon loan do you have? And really what we want to see, you should look at that balance sheet and it should say, you know, if I have $100,000 in inventory and $500,000 in debt, you are upside down. You need to get help right away, because that means the money that you're borrowing isn't reflecting the amount of inventory you're showing. You're going in the wrong direction. If I have $500,000 in inventory, and you know I have $75,000 or you know $100,000 in debt, and you know my margins are high, I can see that my gross and the things you really need to know how to calculate: your gross margin, your net margin. You need to be able to look at some of the, like, your quick ratio. There's a couple of ratios that you can look at that identify that. And you can, if you have a good accountant, then they will walk you through that. We work with Cindy Thomason, who is, she does a bookkeeper specifically for e-commerce people. And she provides coaching for people, like, this is how to read your documents. This is what this means. Should you take that loan? And so that's something that we do. That's something that Cindy does as well. If you're looking at your balance sheet, that's what you're looking for. You know, if you took on a bunch of debt and your inventory isn't high, that means that the expenses, you're not hitting your break-even point, your margins aren't healthy enough. In general, we recommend a 30% gross margin as an absolute minimum. Now, if you have great economies of scale, you're really efficient, yes, there are people who are profitable with less. But for most Amazon sellers, that's where we tell you to target. And then we want to target 15% net. But, you know, as long as you're above 7, I'm okay with that. But you get below 7, there's not a lot of room if you make a mistake. So I would really, you know, again, there are people who do it and they're fine and they're business savvy and they're looking at their numbers. So they don't have a bad business if they have less than that. It's just, you know, I want to make sure that I'm getting a good return on holding all of that debt.
Excellent. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And thank you for some sort of rule of thumb numbers, which I think are very, very helpful. I mean, if nothing else, if it goes outside the sort of rules of thumb, it doesn't mean you should do something necessarily directly, but you should certainly go and investigate. And as you say, talking to your accountant, an excellent idea. So Cindy Thomason, I understand is it bookskeep.com? Is that the website? Because it's always good to have an expert bookkeeper in this area. And I know the quick ratio, I believe, is your current assets divided by your current liabilities, right? So that's obviously a pretty critical number. So that's, as you said, if you've got 500 grand in debt and 100 grand in inventory, there's something very drastically wrong with your business. And you really need to know that as quickly as you can. And then, the margin recommendation, 30% gross, target 15%, but make sure it's above 7. That ties in with what I've seen as well and recommendations I've seen. So, okay. So look, if we discover them when we're looking in to our books and we've taken the time to, you know, roll up our sleeves and, you know, hold our nose and whatever other things that we're hesitating, what are some quick fixes then? You're talking about, you know, hiring family, lack of profit, inventory management. Are there any other sort of things that we can do to sort of turn the situation around in your experience?
So if you're in a debt spiral, then what my recommendation would be is you go through your inventory. If you have significant stale inventory, first step is to identify what's breaking down in your buying criteria. You're buying too deep, You're buying not enough margin. You're buying items with too much competition. Maybe you're buying items at national sales where maybe the price is just tanking and you're having to hold it for a long period of time. So that's area one to look at. And the reason why that's before the second one is because we don't want you buying more bad inventory if, you know, it takes you a week or two to get to step two. So step two would be to look at all of your expenses. And then I want you to look at what can you cut. Anything, you know, I'll tell you a secret. I have subscription-based services. I will take you back. Pretty much all subscription places, they will take you back. You can leave for a month or two and you can come back, but cut as much as you can. What labor is not being utilized? What services are not being utilized? Do I really need this warehouse? Can I talk to my landlord and see about moving into one of his smaller units? What can I do to cut those expenses? And then after we look at that, then we're going to look at what can I do to raise my ROI? You know, what do I need to do in order to, without making the churn longer, without having to buy things that are really long tail, what can I do to start to increase my ROI? So what we're working on playing with is we're working on trying to increase your gross margin, and we're going to try to lower your expenses, and then we're going to try to keep that cash from sucking things up. And it's tempting to just get a loan to fix it. Most cases, the loan is not going to fix it. It's going to create another payment that's going to put you further in debt. Doesn't mean you might not end up doing that debt, but you want to make sure that you have that 13-week rolling cash flow that says, here's how I'm going to pay it back. Here's how I'm going to spend the money. And so you have a really detailed plan and you have a best and worst case scenario. So that's going to be what we recommend. And you need to be keeping that weekly cash flow updated every week, because that's how you're going to identify expenses that start to creep back in, looking at, you know, who's spending enough money. And so you need to be watching that spend and being really clear on that break even point.
Excellent. Well, that's very reassuring advice. And I think that's probably a good place to stop it before we end up getting into areas where you just need to start talking to your accountant, really, which, as I say, is always a good plan. So the I think your 5-hour challenge sounds like it's going to be a very good one for people to take there, which is, I guess, the idea that you is what's the idea about 5 hours? Is it that you're going to fix your business in 5 hours or identify the problems? What's the 5-hour about?
Yes. So there's 5 tasks that each are about an hour. And the idea is that by the end of the 5 hours, you're not going to fix everything in 5 hours, but you're going to identify, is my business as healthy as I think? And if not, what are the directions? So you're going to know what's going on in your business. And so you can identify how to fix it. So that's something that we have available. If you're like, look, lady, I'm not signing up for your email list. Just give me something else that I can use, which is great. This is not my book. It's Mike Michalowicz. It's called Profit First. If you are not analytical, if you're analytical, you probably aren't going to like his book. But if you are not analytical, but you're trying to manage your money, this is a great way to do it. And if you do nothing else from the book, separating out your Amazon disbursement into two accounts, two different bank accounts, you put the money for inventory in bank account A, and you put the money for all your expenses in account B, even if you just do that, it's going to help you significantly and give you an early warning system if you're going in the wrong direction. Cindy Thomason wrote Profit First for e-commerce, which is also really great. It has a lot of some of the same things, but she kind of tailors it directly to Amazon sellers. So I would just highly recommend that book. If I had found that book earlier, we wouldn't have gotten in the cash flow struggle that we ended up in. So I really feel strongly that Profit First is a great thing for Amazon sellers.
That's great. I mean, so can you just spell that name for people who are going to go and Google it? And obviously you can look at the notes, which will be amazingfba.com/blog. And just spell that name for us while we're at it.
Yeah, so Google knows his name is hard. So if you type in Mike and then M-I-C-H-A-L-O-W, it's autofills, but it's W-I-C-Z.
Okay. I mean, it might just be easier to put in Mike and Profit First or Profit First in the books, wouldn't it, I guess?
Yes, and if the book's available on Amazon.
Amazing, of course, like anything in the world. Just to let you know as well, so if you want to come and I'm just trying to see what the number is going to be for this one. I'm not entirely sure, but it's going to be fairly recent if you're listening recently on amazingfba.com/blog. That was very professional of me, isn't it, not to know the exact number to find the show notes. But trust me, I'm writing many, many notes here. And particularly when there's numbers involved, you may find it pretty helpful to check the written notes. So I'd suggest you do that. So listen, Robin, thank you for being willing to talk about some difficult stuff, which, as you say, is not the sexy stuff that sells courses, but it's a reality. And also the fact that once you're willing to look at reality, you can fix it. And the other thing to say is, to put the positive spin on it, it's a massive competitive advantage. If your competition doesn't have a clue what they're doing with their cash flow management, sooner or later, they're going to get out of business. And if you do know how to manage it, you'll stay in business. So if you want to put on it in terms of winning and beating other people, which I know for the men listening is probably particularly important. I know how you work, guys. then I think that's probably quite a good way of looking at it. You know, it's a massive competitive advantage to understand your numbers because most people don't bother. So Robin, really, really good, healthy reality checks there. Any sort of parting advice for anyone whose head's reeling a bit from all of this stuff?
One step at a time. So baby step one, not Dave Ramsey's baby step one, who's also great, but step one would be just figuring out how much your expenses are, then looking at your break-even point, then looking at stale inventory. So you could do one of those a week for the next 3 weeks. And even just that, even if you never open your profit and loss, that will still help you get in the right direction. And, you know, there are lots of people who provide services that can help coach you through this. And yes, you know, it's hard to spend money when you're already tight, but sometimes just having somebody that you can talk to, that you can share freely with, makes a big difference.
Yeah, I'm into that. Definitely. I think the more time we educate ourselves and having somebody in your corner, they're both fantastic things to do when it comes to the financials. So Robin, really, you know, quite a sobering episode, but actually really, really helpful and healthy, I think. And I think if you are, you know, struggling this sounds a bit like one of those sort of adverts on TV when you're struggling with a particular thing. This is not a charity call, but if you are struggling, I would suggest you reach out to someone like Cindy Thomason, that you read the book. And of course, you can reach out to Robin as well. So Robin, what's the best way for people to reach out to you if they want to get some advice from you or join your academy?
So you can email me at Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, at bestfromthenest.com. If you join the academy, there's a Facebook group that you can join and you can contact me there. I'm also on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter, but not enough to be cool, but I am on there occasionally. So feel free to reach out. If nothing else, I can say a little prayer for you. But for the most part, there is a way back no matter where you are. And if you looked at those numbers and you're like, dang, I'm awesome, then you should really take a moment and really be proud of your accomplishments. You know, celebrate that win. I think celebrating all the little wins in your business is really, really important.
Excellent. Lovely, lovely advice. And by the way, I think that you're the only kind of full service business that can not only look at the numbers, but do a prayer for you as well. So that's a pretty unique selling point. So Robin, thank you so, so much for coming on. Been fantastic to talk to you.
It was a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few. Then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.